What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
After months of wrangling, House Democrats prepare to pass the social and climate spending bill. Plus, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi suspends farm laws that prompted massive protests last year. And how does Joe Biden's ambitious agenda stack up to his Democratic predecessors?
The New Deal spending is still like 2 to 3 times larger than what Biden is likely to get through.
It's Friday, November 19th. I'm Peter Granitz with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The U.S. House is set to pass today the $2 trillion social and climate policy bill. A vote was expected Thursday night, but an hours-long speech by Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy delayed that.
Never in American history has so much been spent at one time. Never in American history will so many taxes be raised and so much borrowing to be needed to pay for all this reckless spending.
Earlier Thursday, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office determined the bill would add $367 billion to the deficit over the next decade. Some Democrats said the CBO analysis doesn't fully account for the revenue the bill would bring in. And while there are concerns in the U.S. about the economy overheating, Japan's government has today approved a $490 billion spending package to support the pandemic recovery. It includes cash payments to most families and some smaller companies. The size of the package was nearly double what analysts were expecting earlier this month and amounts to about one-tenth of Japan's GDP. Japan's economy remains smaller than its pre-pandemic peak, while the U.S. and China have already made up their pandemic setbacks. In India, Prime Minister Narendra Modi is repealing controversial farm laws that have drawn massive protests since being enacted last year. The Journal's Sean Lee is in New Delhi, and she says it's a setback to Modi's efforts to overhaul India's economy.
A lot of economists agree that the farming sector in India does need to be overhauled and that reforms need to be implemented to make agriculture more responsive to market forces. But this backtracking by Modi shows that he's not politically invincible, and any reforms he will want to make in terms of the farming sector, he will have to consult farmers going forward.
Protesting farmers have argued the laws would begin to dismantle the system of regulations and subsidies that bolsters their incomes. And Nike has launched a digital play space on Roblox, allowing users to dress their avatars in Nike-branded clothing. The move comes a month after the company filed trademark applications to sell digital versions of its shoes and clothes. It's one more sign that companies of all sizes are preparing to profit from the future metaverse. The ongoing chip shortage has made it all but impossible to get your hands on a new car, and that's helped to run up the price of new vehicles. But if you've invested in chip stocks, you may have a little extra money to help pay for that car, because shares in chip companies are on a tear as of late. Stocks like Qualcomm and Nvidia are up more than 40% in the last month. Advanced Micro Devices, that's up more than 30%. To make sense of why, we are joined by markets editor Quentin Webb. Hi there.
Hi there.
Quentin, why would investors plow money into companies that cannot meet demand right now?
Well, that's a good question, but I guess if you think of it in very simple terms, if supply and demand are out of balance, that's generally good for companies because it means they can perhaps charge more for their products, or it means they can run at fuller capacity and then their margins go up. So it's not necessarily bad for an industry if you have more demand than you can meet.
We said on the show yesterday that sales at Nvidia doubled last quarter. Have chip makers shown the market they will be able to meet demand, or are buyers just prepared to wait?
Well, there's a bit of a complicated answer to that question, I think, because actually not all chips are the same. So yes, to some extent, semiconductor companies are plowing huge sums of money into factories. So capital expenditure in the industry this year is likely to be something close to $150 billion. But as my colleagues at the Wall Street Journal have written recently, most of those dollars are going into cutting-edge facilities. So companies are very focused on making the best chips, which then go into high-end smartphones, etc. They're less interested in making what are called legacy chips, and most of the capex isn't going into that area. And that actually is where some of the shortages are focused. So yes, there is interest in spending heavily to kind of improve one's competitive position, but no, there doesn't seem to be necessarily that much interest in spending so much to kind of meet some of the gaps in the market.
Is this a good sign for the broader economy?
Well, again, that's an interesting question, because when one industry is prospering like this and shareholders are prospering, doesn't necessarily mean things are great for the economy. Here, the shortages, as we've talked about many times on the show, are leading to all kinds of other problems. I guess you might say, to the extent that this persists, you know, it'll maybe encourage a bit more competition, maybe will encourage people to kind of invest in the areas where there are shortages. But it's probably more a case of, you know, some staggering gains for shareholders. Some of these stocks are up more than 40% in the last month, rather than a kind of full-throated voice of support for the economy.
That is markets editor Quentin Webb. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much.
Coming up, FDR, LBJ, Joe Biden, putting the current president's domestic spending agenda into context. That's after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Some 800 people showed up to the White House earlier this week to watch President Biden put his name to paper and sign the $1 trillion infrastructure bill into law. And if the words of praise for the bill are any indication, Democrats see his agenda as nothing short of transformational.
Your agenda is historic, transformative, and the biggest, boldest investment in our country's history.
Now they're getting one of the largest infrastructure bills ever.
What this historic legislation means for everyday Americans.
President Dwight Eisenhower signed the National Interstate and Defense Highways Act in the middle of the Cold War. And today, President Joe Biden will sign the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act into law.
Coupled with the social and climate bill in Congress now, Biden's agenda may top $3 trillion. We are talking about real money here. And how does that stack up to the Democrats of years past that Biden and others like to compare themselves to? We are joined by national political correspondent John McCormick to find out. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
So what's the answer? How does Biden stack up to FDR and Lyndon Johnson, the two Democratic presidents who had the biggest social agendas of the last century?
Well, the early evidence suggests he won't be able to match those two Democratic icons, in part because we're just living in vastly different economic and political times. We tried to sort of benchmark this by looking at the rate of spending compared to GDP that FDR did as part of the New Deal, and then what Biden has already gotten part of the bipartisan infrastructure bill through Congress, plus this very large social and green energy legislation that he still wants to get passed. So we looked at sort of the price tags as a share of GDP. And really, when you do it that way, the New Deal spending is still like 2 to 3 times larger than what Biden is likely to get through. So it's Biden's legislation is a big deal, but it's just not sort of in the league of FDR or LBJ's Great Society legislation of the 60s.
Of course, it's not all determined by GDP and dollars, right? I mean, what about the substance? Any idea of how lasting the impact of these bills might be in comparison?
Yeah, it's always hard to know, but, you know, Republicans are poised to potentially gain control of one or both chambers of Congress next year. They're going to be tempted to potentially roll some of this stuff back if they have the votes. And also, the funding of a lot of these programs, because of the way federal budgeting works, the spending is not guaranteed for eternity. It's always hard to take a benefit back after you give one to the American public if it's something that's popular. But in this case, several of these items in the social spending agenda bill are really only financed for, you know, 5 to 6 years. So future Congresses will have to decide whether this is something that they want to renew or not. And of course, it's going to depend on what the country's political control is like at that time.
You report that big spending, these large expansions of government, tend to happen after national crises. What do you mean?
History shows that there oftentimes is long-term spending after a major incident in the country. The Cold War helped spawn the interstate highway system. The 9/11 terrorist attacks produced new consolidated agencies to deal with homeland security and national intelligence. And so economists call this actually the ratchet effect. And it's something that once something is introduced into federal spending after a crisis, the spending sort of ratchets up and it doesn't tend to ratchet back down. Whether the current crisis that we're in, the COVID-19 pandemic, is similar to that sort of is hard to know because the economy has snapped back much more quickly than it did, say, after the Depression. So, you know, there may not be as much sort of public angst and desire for programs to continue.
Does Biden have the public support to expand the government like he wants to? And how does that public support compare to his predecessors?
This is actually a question that Gallup asks routinely in its polling. And what it found was in 2000, Americans were more supportive of an active role for government. And you can kind of understand that. The pandemic was, you know, just breaking and it was at its peak. And so people were looking to government for how are we going to get through this crisis. But then we saw here in 2021, the numbers sort of inverted. In September, Gallup asked the question again, and they found that attitudes had shifted back to more sort of a hands-off approach. And 52% said the government is doing too many things that should be left to individuals and businesses, and 43% want the government to do more to solve the country's problems. So just in the course of, you know, 1 year between 2020 and 2021, we sort of saw the numbers invert in terms of people's views of what the government should or should not be doing.
And Biden's facing a federal debt level that no other president has done before. Does that limit his New Deal ambitions?
Yeah, it does because, you know, the public does worry about federal spending and debt. It's not sort of a day-to-day or bread-and-butter issue, but it is something that is sort of in everybody's back of their brain that, you know, this stuff is going to have to be paid for at some point. And the current annual budget deficits and the total federal debt have been running at levels, you know, roughly around 100% of GDP and at levels that have been the highest since World War II. So that's going to make for a different environment than times when Roosevelt was dealing with trying to get legislation passed or LBJ was trying to get legislation passed when the debt and deficit just was not nearly as large.
Most Republicans and even some Democrats have started to sound the alarm on the cost of all this spending. Does history tell us how long we may have to wait to learn the true cost of these new programs or the expansion of the existing programs?
Yeah, it does take time, and it will depend on whether these programs become ongoing programs or whether they're things that just last for 5 or 6 years that are eventually not funded in the future. But as one example, Medicare and Medicaid started as very small pieces of the federal budget. But at this point, they now represent about 6% of GDP. So just those two programs alone have now grown to the level where they're basically equivalent to 6% of the entire U.S. economy.
John McCormick is a national political correspondent. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And finally, like seemingly everything these days, Scotch whiskey is difficult to move around the world. Reporter Alistair MacDonald has the story of one shipment of single malt. A liquor store in Maryland had hoped to have it by Thanksgiving, and it begins at the Adelphi Distillery on the west coast of Scotland.
They decided that they would go down the air freight route. That was far from trouble-free, that route. That typically that would be a more expensive but easier way to get it across. But even that had massive delays. As the president of Imex Beverages said, is that these days air freight can take as long as the time it used to take to get a cargo across by sea, which is pretty incredible because you go to air freight precisely because it's much faster. So you're adding all that extra expense and saving yourself time, but only in the sense of what a sea journey would take now. But, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, in particular, that sea journey would have taken a lot less time.
It was a lot more expensive. It cost about $4 per bottle to ship by air. And by sea, Adelphi says that's about 22 cents. You can see the photo story on our website. That's WSJ.com. And that's What's News for Friday morning. We will be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.